This podcast was first broadcast on Mix 92.6. Go to mix92.6.com to find more Environment Matters podcasts. And if you enjoy what we do, to find out how you can support the station, which is run entirely by volunteers. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Welcome to Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around Hertfordshire and from further afield. Now, have you noticed this? During the hot weather, I open my windows wide in the evening to let in some cool air. But it's not just the cool air that comes in, but moths as well. Loads of moths. I suddenly noticed little brown moths. A big moth with a hairy body, a little silvery moth that folds down flat like a paraglider. And most of the time, I'm barely aware of moths. I certainly don't give them the attention that I give to their daytime counterparts, butterflies. But it turns out that moths are super important. They're in trouble and we can help. But it turns out that they're super important. They're in trouble and we can help. So I was delighted to be joined in the studio by Hertfordshire's Mr. Moth, Colin Plant. Now, Colin's been the Hertfordshire Moth Recorder for over 30 years, which gives him a unique insight into our county's moths and what's happening to them. He also heads up the Hertfordshire and Middlesex Moth Group. I started by asking Colin to explain why moths are so important.
Oh, well, I think they're very important, Amanda. I think they're probably more important than a lot of things. People don't realise that they're just as important as bees for pollinating our crops that we eat, not to mention all the wildflowers, so that we actually have a countryside, because, of course, without that, there would be no plants. Of course, the other thing is their caterpillars, which is the main phase, are food for birds and other things. So without moths, you'd be in dire straits, I think.
Yes, indeed. Yes, I've heard that blue tits are particularly partial to caterpillars and they're young.
Yes, the blue tits in my garden are little swines. I watched them taking all the caterpillars off my birch tree. It's a wonder that anything survives.
Yes.
Well, they do, of course. I mean, don't forget that the average moth lays between 200 and 400 eggs, and only two of those need to survive to maintain the population.
But it just shows there's lots of caterpillars to go around supporting other parts of the ecosystem.
Exactly.
I wondered also what you thought about the idea as being moths, because they have got these different parts of their life cycle, being a good indicator of the general health of the environment.
They are indeed, yeah, very good indicators of habitat quality is the sort of term we would use. Yes, I mean, by listing the species in a particular site, particular area, particular county, particular whatever, it gives you an idea of the health of that area you're looking at. Of course, you've got to have a base knowledge of what should be there or what could be there. But, you know, that's what we in the Hertfordshire Moth Group do, is get that baseline data from all over the county and also, of course, from the county of Middlesex. And once we've got that baseline data, we can then compare lists from, say, for example, your garden. So if you've got a nice, neat, manicured garden, you might only get a low number of moths. If you've got a nice bit of woodland and a pond and some grassland, which not many of us have, of course, you're going to have rather more moths, and the moths are going to give you an indication of quality, because you will look at what they're feeding on, of course.
Indeed. And the other thing about moths is there's only 59 types of butterflies.
Yes.
And there's not so much diversity, whereas moths are,
yes,
are
there's,
using
there's,
many...
There's many, many more moths. There are, in round figures, just under 3,000 moths in Britain. The figure for Hertfordshire is, in round figures again, around 1,800. So that's, yeah, yes, quite a bit more than the butterflies.
Yes, and so they're exploiting different plants, different ecological niches.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. That's the point. I mean, some of them are wetland things. They're in the local marshes and rivers and streams. Some of them are in the tree canopy. Some of them are in the undergrowth in woodlands. Some are in grasslands. They've all got different food plants and therefore different habitats. So they are a good measure of all of the different habitats.
Indeed. So tell us, you're the county moth recorder. What exactly
for my sins, yes.
What exactly does that job involve?
Well, it's voluntary. See, I'm appointed by the Hertfordshire Natural History Society for Hertfordshire. And, for London, I'm appointed by the London Natural History Society. Every county in Britain has got a moth recorder. Every county has also got a lot of other recorders recording other wildlife groups, which, of course, is how people know what's there. When you watch the David Attenborough on the television and he's spouting all those pearls of wisdom, he hasn't actually done all the research himself. Of course not. No man could. He is drawing on the information that hundreds of volunteers have gathered over the years. My task as the Hertfordshire moth recorder is, as it sounds, very logical, is to keep a record of all the moths in Hertfordshire. But we do that by getting all the people who are interested in the Hertfordshire Moth Group, which is voluntary and free, and people catch moths in their gardens and elsewhere, and they send me the information at the end of each year.
So you say they catch moths. How do they do that?
They catch moths, yes. I'm even going to ask me that. Well, there's all sorts of ways of catching and recording moths. There are commercially available moth traps. Moths come to light, as most people know. You can then harness that and create a moth trap, which doesn't hurt the moth at all. You have a bulb which allows a moth to come in and then drop into a container which you line with cardboard egg boxes, which allows them somewhere to settle. And then in the morning, you take them all out and have a look at them, because they're all theoretically sitting quietly and behaving themselves with their wings exposed for you to compare with the pictures in the book. That never happens, but never mind.
And this is something that volunteers do throughout Hertfordshire, and then you collect all of their results. And so you have this unique record which shows how moths are doing and is a great mirror into how the ecology of the county
absolutely,
is doing.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well.
I keep a huge database. We've got, it's quite interesting actually, we've got just over 2 million records of moths, which is an awful lot. And we've got about 300-ish people in the moth group, of which about 150 are active. It's quite a lot of recording effort on the part of volunteers.
Yeah.
And, of course, we're always looking for more. So if any of your listeners are interested, they can get in touch either via our website, which I'll mention in a minute, or through the station here.
Yeah, indeed. And as you say, this essential recording work, it's all volunteers.
Absolutely. It's critical work, because without, we wouldn't have the information on the countryside or anything without these volunteers doing it.
Yeah, indeed. So when I was preparing for this show, I was thinking about moths that I was already aware of. And sadly, most of the ones I could think of were things like clothes moths.
Of course.
Box moths. Open sesame moths. And it felt...
Yes, there's lots of bad ones, yes.
Yes, indeed. And I thought, how have we ended up with giving moths such a bad press when so many of them out there?
Well, I don't believe any of them are bad, of course, but I mean, there are moth species that do, inverted commas, damage, although not much of it is permanent. I mean, the box moth, which you mentioned, which is a recent invader from the Far East and is now absolutely everywhere in huge numbers on box hedges and box topiary. It strips the plants completely, but then the next year they grow back again. You've got another one which is called the horse chestnut leaf miner, which spread along the motorways across Europe and is now just about everywhere in every horse chestnut tree. The leaves go brown in the autumn. The next year, they're happy as Larry, back again. But of course, there's lots and lots of good moths. The bad moths are far outweighed by the good ones. The ones that, I mean, by good ones, I mean things that pollinate, you know, your garden flowers and your crops and whatever, yeah. Or do no damage at all, or no interaction at all. The bad ones, I mean, you could probably count them on probably two hands, but I mean, there aren't that many, and they don't really affect you. And if you've got them in your wardrobe, okay, you know, stick some mothballs in, but other than that, just leave them be. They'll be fine.
Indeed. They're just exploiting an ecological niche.
They are, indeed.
And we can't blame them for that.
And, of course, if you want to get rid of things outside, I mean, of course, the best way is to pick them off by hand, because that way you're not using any nasty chemicals.
Of course. So you're the Hertfordshire Moth Recorder, so of anybody, you will have a very good idea about what's happening to the populations of these crucial insects throughout Hertfordshire.
Yeah.
What are you seeing?
Well, We see, well, some, a lot of interesting things. You have to set it against the background of the birth of the Moth Group, which was in the year 2000. So prior to that, we don't really know much about what we had. There's quite a lot of stuff, but not much. Since 2000, we've got a stack of information that we know, so we're beginning to be able to compare and contrast, as it were. The ballpark figure of 1,800 moths for Hertfordshire is an all-time number. The number since year 2000 is around about 1,200, which means that around about 600 have been lost.
So that's a third of the yes. moths you think we started off with have gone.
Exactly, they've gone. Now, we haven't seen them at all since the year 2000, in spite of my 150 active members of the Moth Group running moth traps most nights, going out into the countryside, looking for caterpillars, whatever. So that gives us a slight warning. Now, some of those 600 will have been just gone, so nationally gone. Nothing much we can do about it. But some of them have gone from Hertfordshire. There's a little thing called the dark-barred twin-spot carpet, which is a little tiny moth that looks a bit like a small butterfly. We used to catch it fairly regularly in garden moth traps. I certainly caught it in mine in Bishop Stortford. Since approximately 10 years ago, it stopped appearing, and nobody's caught any since. It's disappeared, completely become extinct in the last 10 years. Now, it may magically reappear, and we don't know why it's disappeared, but it's slightly worrying that these things happen.
Indeed. And do you have any insight into the reasons why? You said you don't know why this particular moth has gone.
An awful lot of the problem is the wider environment. It's the loss of habitat. And not just the loss of habitat, it's the sort of breaking up of habitat, so it's not joined together anymore. I think most listeners will have heard of things called green corridors. They're important. It is critical that separate units of habitat are joined together, such that the insects and other things can move around freely. Moths can fly, but they need to fly down hedge lines or what you might call rough ground, field edges, verges and so on. When farmers plough right to the edge, there's no verge for the moths to move along.
Yes, and the plants that their caterpillars need to survive, if we
They've
remove
those...
They've
got to be there, yes. Effect. Of course, they're not on crop fields.
Yes.
They're in the verges, so if you take out the verges, even if you replace them the next year, you will lose quite a lot.
So if we're thinking about ways that we can help moths, we recognise that they need our help and they're really important. It sounds like we need in our own gardens to be growing a big diversity of plants, making them to be part of a green corridor.
That's a big part of it. Of course, gardens are very important. You do need to also lobby. I mean, the local authority, what have they got? Parks, what are they? Mown grass billiard tables. Why? You know, you can have football pitches and a verge around the edge. I know there are problems with safety, especially for women and girls, but you can have bushes planted in some areas, or trees which are not obstructing views, so things can feed in the canopy. There's all sorts of things that can be done. And then, of course, as everybody knows, you can lobby at the national level, the business about habitat loss generally.
Yeah, and I was just wondering about another couple of things. So you mentioned pesticides earlier. Presumably you'd rather we weren't using, particularly insecticides.
We don't need them, do we? Why do people use pesticides in their gardens? There's absolutely no point whatsoever.
Okay, we'll still work clear of those. And how about garden lighting? Because, as you say, moths are attracted to light, so this can presumably affect their behaviour.
Yes, there's all sorts of issues around that. Lots of research going on at the moment. They were beginning to demonstrate that there are adverse effects of light. That's the first thing, are there any effects or not? And having established that fact, we're now trying to work out how and why. I believe that in Hampshire they have done some experimental work in positioning streetlights and planting trees and bushes behind the streetlights so that the fall of the light is significantly less in terms of distance. They are monitoring that and they have found a much increased number of caterpillars and moths in the shaded areas.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that's, it kind of proves the point.
Yeah, and if we can avoid lighting our gardens,
well, if we can avoid it,
night.
Yeah, we can't really avoid it on the highways, of course. I mean, I'm a motorist and I curse when there's no lights because I can't see. But in your gardens, I mean, people who are rich enough to floodlight their gardens all night have a triggered light for intruders and whatever, but you don't need to have lights on permanently.
No. So just if we're thinking about how we might be appreciating moths a little bit more, can you give us just a couple of moths that we might look out for in Hertfordshire?
It's interesting because everybody's garden's going to be different. I mean, I'm sure we're talking about gardens here. But I mean, the things that occur in almost everybody's garden. Let's see, now at the moment we're just starting to get Jersey tiger moths, which are big moths, red and black and yellow, big by, I say, about 3 inches across. They're quite big things, and you might see them feeding on your buddleia bushes if you've got them, along with other things like the silver wye moth. If we get lucky this year, migrations happen quite often. Hummingbird hawk moths are frequent in Hertfordshire most years. They look like little hummingbirds, fantastic things. But at the ground level, you know, you will disturb things. The yellow shell is often disturbed from vegetation in gardens. It's a little thing you can look up in various books or websites. The large yellow underwing is a frequent thing. I mean, I could list you a couple of 300 that are in everybody's garden.
It sounds like there's a lot we could be looking out for, yeah, and appreciating.
Can I at this point then mention in the website, people can go on there and they can look at pictures of the moths. There's also a facility to see what is flying now. It's heartsmiddix.co.uk. That's for Hertfordshire and Middlesex, of course. And go and have a look. And of course, if you want, you can contact me through there and join the group.
Well, Colin, thank you very much indeed for coming and whetting our appetites for the wonderful world of moths. I'm looking forward to going and taking a look in my own garden and seeing what
I can find.
I
shall be coming to do an inspection at the weekend.
Lovely to talk to you today.
Thank you, Amanda.
I was talking there to the Hertfordshire moth recorder, Colin Plant. I'll pop the link to the veritable mine of information that is the Hertfordshire and Middlesex Moth Group website into the notes that go with the podcast of this show and that you'll find on the podcast page of mix926.com, where, as Colin said, you can find pictures of the moths that are in your garden right now and find out what they're called. And you know, we didn't even get into all the gorgeous names that the moths have. Things like the autumn green carpet and the beautiful yellow underwing. Anyway, I'm off to give some love to the moths in my garden right now. I'll be with you at the same time next week, but until then, thank you for listening.